Good evening. The first order of business is a public hearing on the proposed Tompkins-Cortland Community College 2013-2014 budget. Would anyone like to address the public and the legislature on the TC3 budget for this coming year? You didn't hear me? You can close that door. This is a hearing on the TC3 budget for 2013-2014. All right, I will close the hearing and call the July 2nd, 2013 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible,
roll call of members. Ms. Herrera. Ms. Kiefer.
Present.
Mr. Lane.
Here.
Ms. McAsey.
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne.
Present.
Mr. McKenna.
Here.
Mr. Proto.
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I would like to reorder business a bit to accommodate staff who are here. So first we will have public privilege of the floor. I've got only three people signed up. If anyone else would like to speak after those three speak, then they can do that. After public privilege, I'd like to recognize Pat Pryor for recognition of one of our departments and then go to the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Report for Jim Dennis's report as well as the TC3 resolutions. Okay, and then we'll move on through the rest of the agenda. So first, public privilege. I have David Skowronek. Skowronek, and then Faye Gugakis is second.
Greetings. My name is David Skowronek, and I'm the executive director of the Downtown Ithaca Children's Center, formerly known as the Drop-In Children's Center. I'll talk about that more in a moment. And this is Brenda Pape, the board president of the Downtown Ithaca Children's Center. For those of you who are not familiar with us, we have been in operation since the 1970s and are licensed to serve up to 82 children ages 6 weeks to 5 years old. Our center provides both full-time and drop-in care, an after-school program, and a summer camp. While our center is open to everyone, our mission has been to focus our efforts on serving economically challenged families, and indeed most of our clients, currently about 75%, are receiving daycare assistance from the Department of Social Services. Now about our name change. Our old name, the Drop-In Children's Center, comes from a much earlier time when the program was basically a parent collective. We have come a long way since those days. We are now primarily a full-time child care and education facility with a fully developed curriculum and a well-trained professional staff. We felt simply that the old name no longer reflected the full spectrum of what we now had to offer. So we decided to change it, and it's now Downtown Ithaca Children's Center. Here are just a few of the changes that we've made recently. We have established a partnership with the Science Center to develop and implement a pioneering program to teach science to very young children. We are just completing a very successful first year of this program, and we'll be continuing to hold classes both at our center and at the Science Center. We have greatly improved the quality of our food program, which provides freshly prepared breakfast, lunch, and a snack cooked on premises every day. Our program is now using organic grains and beans and fresh organic vegetables when available. We even make our own baby food now. Every child that comes through our center is now given a personal assessment using what is known as the Devereaux Early Childhood Assessment Tool. This tool helps teachers identify both the emotional strengths and the needs of each of our children.
One more minute.
Our teachers are also trained in the implementation of what is called Second Step, which is a nationally recognized curriculum kit designed to reduce impulsive and aggressive behavior in young children. Second Step teaches skills in empathy, impulse control, and anger management. These are just a few of the changes we've made, but time doesn't permit me to discuss any more. Our main goal is to have each child who leaves or graduates from our center to be socially, emotionally, and intellectually ready to enter and succeed in public school. In conclusion, I want to thank you all personally for all the support and help that you have given us in the past. Your support has been critical in our efforts to continue to serve our target population. So thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Faye Gugakis, and then Heather Campbell. And I know a lot of people have come in, so let me just say when I... Heather is the last person signed up to speak. If anyone else would like to speak to the legislature, you could just come to the microphone after Heather. We have a three-minute time limit, and Kathy Covert up here will help you keep track of the time. So, Faye.
Good evening. My name is Faye Gugakis. I live in the city of Ithaca. I'd like to talk about two things. One, the first one, very quickly, because I will be talking about this again. I was at the meeting last night about the plastic ban issue, and I want to be honest. I use plastic bags. I use them regularly, and right now I am against the ban. I'm against the ban because I don't like the way it's proceeding. I don't think we have enough education, and it's being done very, very quickly. So at the moment, I want to go on record that I'm against the ban. Not that I like plastic. I do not like plastic at all. But I don't think the way it's being presented and the pace it's being presented is not fair to the whole community. The second thing is very emotional and hard for me. As a cyclist, as we know, there was a woman. She belonged to my church. She was head of the Philoptero Society, the society that puts on the Greek Bake Sale, the society that donates many good things to our community, raises money for our community. That woman was killed. She was 49 years old. She was riding a bicycle. That is very difficult for me. Why is it difficult for me? Because for years, I've become the city hall and the county talking about cell phones, talking about texting, talking about the tinted windows, which nobody's addressing. None of these articles here by the journal talks about the tinted windows. When we talk about governance, when we talk about law enforcement, no way can you enforce the laws with all the tinted windows that are being put out in the cars. No way. And none of you have ever responded to me. You're running for Congress? You have to address this if you want my vote, because I'm very passionate. Someone died. 49 years old, Harriet died. And I feel it. That church was filled with people mourning. How many people are going to die? There was an investigation done. We talk about alcohol. We talk about drunkenness. We talk about other things. We don't know if that person was looking down at their cell phone, which is constantly happening in this community, that nobody in the progressive community, nobody in the sustainability community that tells me to ride a bike, which I've been doing for 30 years.
One more minute.
Okay? Cares about this issue. And I feel very passionate about what people are doing behind the wheel. Because I live it every day. I see every day people texting. I see every day people not paying attention. And I see my community that's against hydrofracking, that's against plastic bags, that's against all sorts of things. But somehow the digital device has corrupted everybody. Somehow that cell phone... No, there's no protest against what the cell phone has created. It has corrupted our society. Okay? And I want that addressed. I don't want another death. We don't know what happened. I don't think that's being investigated. I'm asking you to find out, are the police investigating that or not? Because other communities look at the cell phone at a time of an accident.
Finish up, Bill, please.
And see whether that person was using the cell phone. Is that too hard? Is that too hard? What happens if I die tomorrow? Is anybody going to care? I mean, this is common sense. And you know what? I called Andrew Cuomo, and I thanked him for passing a very hard texting bill. And I think we should all do that.
Thank you, Faye.
Because sometimes something good comes out of that office.
The next speaker is Heather Campbell. And after that is Sam Law.
Hi, I'm Joan Farbman. I'm here as the soon-to-be former director of the Advocacy Center of Tompkins County, and I'm really here to introduce Heather Campbell, who is our long-term employee and the incoming director of the Advocacy Center, starting right now. And thank you all for all the work that you've been doing for all the years. Thanks.
Thank you, Joan.
Thank you. I'm Heather Campbell, and although I'm new to the role of the executive director position, I have over 16 years of experience in victim services, and as Joan has said, I've been a program director at the Advocacy Center for the last 12 years, and I'm really excited to start this new role in our community. The Advocacy Center provides supportive services to children, teen, and adult victims of domestic violence, child sexual abuse, sexual assault, and rape. We're the only agency in Tompkins County that provides services to these very vulnerable victims of crime. Last year, we saw increased demand for services across almost all of our program areas. In 2012, the agency served 1,498 children, teens, and adult victims of violence and abuse in our county. This was an 8% increase over the previous year. Our services are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we provide comprehensive victim services. This includes services such as our 24-hour hotline, which is most often how people first reach out to us, all the ongoing emotional support we provide, the case management, which for us really means supporting victims of abuse as they navigate the complex legal, medical, and social service systems that they need to negotiate. We provide shelter at our confidential safe house, offer support groups, accompany victims to the hospital, law enforcement, and courts, help many victims access orders of protection that are really critical to their safety for themselves and their children. And we also have a really successful collaboration with Cugin Medical Center on the Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner Program that provides comprehensive forensic medical exams to victims of sexual abuse and rape. And last year we saw a 60% increase in use of this service in Tompkins County. And over half of the SANE exams are for youth victims of sexual violence. One of the ways that our services are unique is that we're often the only one knowledgeable professional who can support victims from when they disclose the abuse through the healing process. And for many victims, this can be a long and difficult process. We're also very proud of our education and prevention services. In 2012, we provided 292 programs to nearly 4,000 youth and adults, which was a 13% increase over the previous year.
One more minute.
We currently get more requests than we're able to fulfill with the increased awareness of the value of prevention education. We're honored to report that we do prevention programming in every school district in Tompkins County. This is something that's not typical for a program like ours, and we've worked very hard over the years to develop these relationships. We're also excited by the work that we've been doing with teen youth activists in four different high schools, where these youth are now taking the lead in fostering conversations about preventing sexual and domestic violence with their peers and in their communities. We also do programs at TC3, Ithaca College, and Cornell. We know that for first-year students, they're particularly vulnerable to sexual assault and rape, so we do very focused outreach and education at the beginning of every school year. We're also particularly excited to announce a new community prevention initiative, the Enough Abuse Campaign. The Advocacy Center was chosen as one of three pilot communities to launch this program in New York State. This is a program that focuses on giving parents and adult community members the information and skills to identify and interrupt child sexual abuse. We're launching the program this fall, and you'll be hearing much more about it as we start trainings in the community. So again, thank you all for your time and attention, and I appreciate the opportunity to update you on the programs and services of the agency.
Thank you, Heather. And Joan, I think we all owe a debt of gratitude to you for your career, for your lifelong work on behalf of all the residents of our community. And welcome, Heather, and congratulations on your new position.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sam Law, and then Hillary Lambert.
Hi, I'm Sam Law. I'm currently an organizer with Shell Shock and the Finger Lakes Action Network. Last Saturday, the Finger Lakes Action Network organized a rally at the Cuga Power Plant. Over 60 people attended to demand a permanent retirement of the coal-fired facility, oppose the repowering of the facility with toxic fracked gas, and advocate for a just transition to renewables for the town of Lansing. Fossil fuels and their related infrastructure no longer have a place on Cuga Lake. The Cuga Power Plant, as it is, has an incredibly toxic legacy. Out of the past 12 quarters, the plant has spent 3 quarters in open violation of the Clean Air Act and 10 in violation of the Clean Water Act. According to the Clean Air Task Force, a nonprofit based in Boston, 5 deaths, 9 heart attacks, and 78 asthma attacks a year in Tompkins County can be attributed to the coal plant. Luckily, for the health and safety of this community, the plant is no longer profitable, and it is being mothballed, which means shut down. However, the upstate New York power producers, at the behest of the Department of Public Service, have proposed to replace the small amount of energy produced at the plant with a costly conversion to run the plant on fracked gas. Such a project would be funded by rate hikes, disproportionately impacting low-income people, and would increase the presence of industrial fracking-related infrastructure in Tompkins County, including an 18-mile pipeline. Furthermore, the economic viability of this plant would depend on the low price of gas, something that relies on the continued poisoning of the land, air, and water of our neighbors in Pennsylvania by the very same fracking industry which is threatening to make incursions into New York. Also, the plant would increase demand for natural gas, making fracking more likely to happen in New York State itself. I understand the power plant is a significant tax base in Tompkins County, and I believe that we are being offered a false choice between the loss of this revenue and a project that would damage our community health.
One more minute.
In these informational packets, which I'm giving you, I also sent an email out to all of you, or to someone to send it to you. In these informational packets, we include not only a detailed history of the plant and cases against coal and fracked gas, but also information on viable alternatives that would provide a just transition off of fossil fuels for the town of Lansing. We believe that alternatives should be thoroughly considered and that Tompkins County should take a lead in exploring energy options of the future rather than the toxic and deadly options of the past. And also in these in this informational packet are quotes from Sandra Steingraber, from Mark Jacobson, from a series of other influential people opposing the repowering. So I would encourage you all to look through it, through them. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Of Hillary Lambert, and any whoever else is interested in speaking should make their way up to the microphone.
Hi there. I'm Dr. Hillary Lambert. I'm a steward or executive director of the Cayuga Lake Watershed Network, a nonprofit that was created in the 1990s to educate about, gather research about, and advocate on behalf of the continued good health of Cayuga Lake and its beautiful creeks. That's what the watershed is. And I'm here to give you a preliminary statement concerning Cayuga Power Plant / AES Cayuga on behalf of the Cayuga Lake Watershed Network and Cayuga Lake. In Kentucky, I'm from here. I live in Dryden. I lived and worked in Kentucky for a long time working for a watershed protection nonprofit and dealing with a lot of coal and energy related issues there. So in Kentucky, where I lived for many years, many towns are beholden to coal companies for jobs and school funding, and in return must live with environmental destruction and economic stagnation. We do not want fossil fuel funding dependency to dictate our future here in Tompkins County. The Cayuga Lake Watershed Network's 2012 position statement on gas drilling and fracking states in part that shale gas dependency and development would forestall the growth of the renewable energy sector that offers to bolster our economic vitality and curtail greenhouse gas emissions. We support an energy policy that promotes conservation and renewable energy sources. Now, protecting our clean water resources is part of that policy. And a worrisome legacy at the AES/Cayuga site is their coal waste landfill. A recent report by Earth Justice, looking at well-documented data sources based on water monitoring wells at the site.
One more minute.
Found, quote, contaminated leachate and runoff from an on-site coal combustion waste landfill discharged directly from a pond into Cayuga Lake. The contaminated discharge contained grossly elevated levels of arsenic, cadmium, and selenium. In addition, a partially unlined landfill contaminated groundwater and residential wells with elevated levels of lead, close quote. So, in conclusion, for the time being, prior to any decisions that are made about the future uses and ownership of the AES Cayuga property, I really think that this problem must be fully investigated, assessed, and mitigated so that it does not further impact Cayuga Lake. And I'll leave a copy of this statement here providing the
sources that I used for this brief statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Hillary. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the legislature?
Hi. Okay. My name is Barbara Coyle. I'm a new resident of Tompkins County. Recently moved. I live in the town of Ithaca. And I recently moved here from Bradford County, Pennsylvania. And I think you can know why. I moved here because of the toxic time bomb that the natural gas industry was bringing to our community. I had lived there for 40 years, had my children there, raised my garden there. It was very difficult to make this move, and I moved here because Tompkins County has been very smart so far around these issues. And I'm just here to add my voice and my name and my family of four's name to this issue and to say it is not a smart move to transition from coal to natural gas. That's a mistake. The time for renewables is now, and Tompkins County is smart enough to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barbara. Anyone else? Go ahead.
Hi, Joanne Cipolla-Dennis, Dryden. I didn't fill out one of your tickets, but thank you. It's a privilege to speak. I just wanted to let you know I'm in opposition of any conversion to natural gas. I've worked for 5 years nearly tirelessly to bring awareness to Dryden to get a ban there successfully, and then we had to sue the industry to keep our local rights. So converting that to gas is a gateway project, which means we now need storage, and we now need to frack gas to support that conversion. I am not going to be supporting anyone who supports that project. These are obsolete fuels. We know that. I'm part of the Dryden Resource Awareness Coalition, who has worked tirelessly to bring Solarize Tompkins SE to fruition. That's a great project going on right now, creating a lot of jobs. Solar Liberty was one of our participants, as was Renovus Energy. We know how to do things better here. That is a gateway project that we cannot afford. To accept another fossil fuel would be saddling the future with a debt that we cannot pay with environmental degradation. I live not far from that plant, and I'm going to tell you right now that I wanted to finish my house and develop that acreage that we have with self-powering homes. However, if that project goes through, it will be a matter of time before fracturing happens, and we will be leaving Tompkins County, just like this woman has left Pennsylvania. So, welcome to Tompkins County, because we're not going to be doing this here. We are not going to be doing this here. This legislature is not going to allow that, because we are smarter than this. We are leaders in this community. We do not follow the industry. We make them do what we want because this is where we live. And I would like to live here, and so would you. And this project is dependent on that. Please don't allow this to happen. We can do other things. We already have the answers. If we do not listen to the greatest minds at Cornell University, who are you going to listen to? Your vote will determine. There's some integrity that's going to happen in this room soon. Please don't disappoint me. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. Judy?
Hi, I'm Judy Pierpont, also a member of Dryden Resource Awareness Coalition. And I would also like to encourage the Tompkins County Legislature to resolve not to support the repowering of the Cayuga Operating Company with fracked natural gas. First, it's not necessary in providing the needed power to our area. NYSEG itself has determined that the problems are limited to peak hours, and those peak hours actually more in Auburn than in this area. They've said that the problems can be solved through grid upgrades, at least the short-term problems. And it seems to me that if there is a short-term problem and we're headed for large-scale renewable generation, that if we can find a short-term solution that will allow us to move in that direction, that if we're only offered a certain number of alternatives in this window with the PSC, that we should make sure that we take the option that allows us to move in the direction of renewables rather than committing ourselves to 30 to 40 years of expensive fracked gas, burning fossil fuels, putting through pipelines, and encouraging a culture and an environment of pipelines, and also condemning Seneca Lake to gas storage on its shores. So taking this solution for the short term would provide time and motivation to move to generation with renewables. So just upgrading would not tie this area to burning fracked gas for 30 to 40 years, and it would be much less expensive. Right now, NYSEG charges its customers $30 million extra to keep the generation going at Cayuga Operating Company. So that's like a tax to keep it going. And so if we're talking about taxes coming to the county or to Lansing, we're already paying $30 million extra as a community for keeping those companies going. So mothballing them, we would not have that $30 million extra rate on top of us. And if we ratepayers will also be will be the ones who are paying for the transition to burning gas. So that's more electricity expense on our backs for having a private company transition to a profit-making operation. We get to pay for the transition. And we don't know that it's ever going to pay off, because gas prices right now are at the floor, and they're going to go up undoubtedly as soon as there's more gas usage, which we would be contributing to, and as soon as they start exporting it. They want it to be global, you know, tied to a global price. And part of the pipelines that are coming through are to get it to the shores where it can be exported as liquefied natural gas, and our rates will go way, way up. So there's no point in converting to a dead fossil fuel.
Thank you, Judy. Anyone else? No one else who'd like to address the legislature? I mean, with people moving, I'm not sure. Raise your hand if you want to come to the microphone. Okay. Thank you. Thank you all very much. Somebody answer the phone. Okay. I'm going to move things around now. As I said before, Pat Pryor, chair of the GO committee, has a presentation to make.
Thank you, Martha. We have some people here from a couple of our departments tonight. I wonder if you could just come up here while I say a few words. Greg, come on. Alana, don't be shy. I've asked members of the county clerk's office and the information technology services department to come up tonight. I'm also going to ask Frank Proto to step up here and help me with this presentation, if you would please, Frank, or to this recognition, I should say. I've asked them to be here tonight to be recognized for being awarded the Robert Arnold Award for Distinguished Service, presented to them by the New York State Association of Local Government Records Officers. The award was given to the county in recognition of the work that the clerk's office and ITS have done to create a cost-effective record scanning and digital storage system. I'll read from the letter that the association president, wrote informing our county clerk, Aurora Valenti, of the award. The association has, quote, chosen Tompkins County for this award for you and your staff's hard work and diligence to change a system by scanning paper documents for retention into an electronic record system, which has resulted in millions of dollars of revenue being saved for your county. The savings keep on coming, too, with the addition of more towns having documents scanned. And lastly, the time saved by county clerks, who can now quickly find a document electronically. The award was made at a ceremony in Corning, New York, on June 10th. The association is right. Through the efforts of several people in this room tonight, and I'm sure others who are not here as well, we have a world-class electronic records management system developed on a shoestring budget that is saving the taxpayers millions and providing the public with far better access to their records. I know that this has been a true team effort, but I think all of the members of the team would agree that it's appropriate to say a special thanks to Maureen Reynolds and Greg Potter. Without Maureen's vision, drive, and tireless work, and without Greg Potter's computer wizardry, I doubt that Tompkins County would now be among the nation's leaders in the digitization of public records. I wonder, Aurora and Greg, do you have any other members of your department here?
No.
Okay. So, Aurora, could you introduce the members of your department, please?
I will. Good evening. I'm Aurora Valenti, your county clerk. I'd like to introduce Alana Congdon, who is our administrative recording clerk. And last but never least, Maureen Reynolds, my deputy clerk. Without whom we would not be here tonight. Thank you so much.
Before we go, before you move on, it is also something, Pat, I'm not sure if you have in your notes there, that it's Aurora's birthday today.
Oh.
So, happy birthday, and many, many, many more, Aurora.
Thank you, thank you.
And I've asked Frank Proto to step up here with me tonight because Frank was involved in the very beginning discussions that we had about this project, and I wanted to ask him to say a couple words about how it got started.
Thanks, Pat. You know, this is like a graduation ceremony or a high school diploma ceremony, and you're watching your kids get recognized. This program started a number of years ago. 50 cents of every document that's filed goes into a kitty, and that money is redistributed at the state level in the New York State Archives Fund. When we started the rural libraries, I was asked to join this commission, and this goes back a number of years, and I have to tell you, this group really deserves a round of applause. Maureen has been wonderful. Aurora's been terrific. Alana's been a really great support person, and Potter, we would not be able to be putting this together without Greg's background. Every other town, we go back to Cookie Polangeli in the city, Miss Tenkate in the town of Ithaca. There's a number of town clerks, Carol Sapansky in Danby, and it goes on and on, Deb DeAugustine and Caroline. We've brought into this community over $2.5 to $3 million in all these rural communities to take advantage of this money. It's a very low-key program, but we pass every year. We have passed an archives week. When I served with Bob Arnold, remember Sue Ann Pascucci in the old days? This we still go to Albany every once in a while to make sure that the state legislature doesn't dip into this fund and steal the money. We had about a year ago, we had to round up the troops and circle the wagon. So this is a very well-deserved award. The county really deserves a pat on the back. Every other municipality, not to steal your thunder, but every other municipality that's participated also deserves a pat on the back for this. It's really wonderful. And I have to tip Maureen off. Since we're moving and some of us have to clean out our desks, I have a set of the original solid waste landfill books, about 12 of them in my desk, that you'll be getting. I know it's just what you wanted. Well, congratulations, and you guys really deserve a pat on the back. And Pat, thanks for doing this. This is really nice. Thank you.
That's very well deserved, and thank you all so much for what you've done. And there's cake after the meeting, right, Aurora? We're having birthday cake after the meeting's over. So, thank you all so much for your service. It's really meant a tremendous amount to the taxpayers and to the citizens. Thank you. And I'll turn this next part of the meeting over to Jim Dennis, Chair of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee.
Thank you very much, Martha. I've asked members of the personnel department to be here tonight to be recognized for receiving the New York State Association of Personnel and Civil Service Officers' highest award for their development of the county's online employment application service. The award was presented to our personnel staff at the association's annual dinner on June 4th. Using our smart work process, a team consisting of Jackie Thomas, who's in the back of the room, Heather Buck, who is not here, Doreen Loper, Anna Smith, who is not here, and Stephen Estes, who is back there, conceived and then worked to implement an online system designed to post exams and vacancies, enable candidates to apply electronically, administer the civil service examination process, manage and certify eligibility lists, and enable all county departments, towns, villages, schools, school districts, and special districts to access approved applications remotely. The new software has tripled the number of applications that we've gotten. I'm not certain the number of jobs we have has tripled, but clearly people are applying for our jobs in a more easy process, something that bodes well for the diversity of our applicant pool and has made navigating the complex civil service system process much more manageable for all involved. As we take a moment to recognize the personnel staff, and there they are, Jackie, Doreen, Stephen. I know they would like me to say how critical our ITS department has been. Greg, and bringing this project to fruition. Let me just editorialize. Everything we do that is moving in the 21st century without without computer help and IT help would be virtually impossible to use. And people like me and my friend Frank have now learned to do things that we could not do 25 years ago with computers. And the members of the department were there. And Jackie, I know you were the team leader, and I would like you to maybe just go to the microphone and say a few words about it, or Stephen, whoever would like to do that.
I'm nominated. Jackie was the team leader, and without her direction and control of the process for a very long period of time, I don't think we would have ended up with as fine of a product as we have. The other staff members of the department, it was truly a team effort, and I feel personally more enriched for having that opportunity to work individually with these people and collectively to come up with this process and product. I'll be the first to tell you we're working with a civil service system that's over 100 years old. It's antiquated, outdated, and I'll be the first one to tell you it should be done away with. But it's not going anywhere soon, so we have to make the best of what we have with the resources that we have. And I will say that this team pulled together and brought that product together on budget and on time. So I'm very proud of the work that they put into it. And thank you all for supporting us. We'd like to thank Joe for also, giving us a strategic direction and supporting our smart work process. And again, Greg for his IT expertise, as well as our vendor catalog and commerce. So thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Let me just say, and I speak for all of us in saying it's wonderful that you've brought the county to better efficiency, more effective in the way we're handling potential applicants, and we appreciate that very much. And clearly, we're hopefully going to be more customer friendly, and that always bodes well for us, I think. So, again, thank you very much, and please a round of applause. This is a bad copy of the plaque they have received. This one is Doreen's, and it's blue in nature. And do you have it with you, Doreen?
No.
Oh, okay. And it's wooden, and it's very nice. So again, we appreciate your work and keep it up. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you all. We like to say that Tompkins County is special, and this is one of these. Both of our departments, all three of our departments, recognized tonight are among the reasons that we do have a leadership role in the state. So thank you all so much for what you do. Jim, do you want to go ahead with your resolution?
I do, and what I would like to do is two items on the budget and cap agenda. Carl is here, and they both have to do with TC3. So let me move the adoption of the 2013-2014 operating budget, Tompkins Cortland Community College.
Second by Dave. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Let me just say, in your resolutions, it's the amount of $38,307,435. It's essentially a 3% increase over what it was last year, which adds up to about $81,000. If there's any questions, Carl is here, and we can certainly go about answering them.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions, comments, discussion? Dooley.
I want to point out for any listeners, do you want to move the resolution first? Or
it's already moved
in second.
Well, I guess I would like to just say about it that the 3% increase, as I understand it, in TC3 net revenue from total taxpayer dollars, that's the 3% you're talking about, is provided by sponsor counties, Cortland and Tompkins. It's called sponsor cash. That's what amounts to the 11.78% you mentioned for the 2013-14 budget, but it's a slight decrease from the 11.95% for the college's present 2012-2013 budget. And there's a way of looking at these budgets as having a state share, a local share, and a student tuition share. And the broader definition of local share includes non-resident tuition, the sponsor cash that we're acting on tonight, college surplus funds, which is the next resolution you'll go to, I guess, and chargebacks. And again, for 2012-13, it was 26% of the TC3 budget, this bigger local share definition. And for the new year, it'll be 25.2% as estimated, which again is a slight decrease. And the reason I wanted to speak about that is just that we all support the college, and it would be nice if we could get back on an increasing. 3% is good, but I hope we can do better in the future.
Thank you, Julie. I've got Jim, then Frank.
I did not mention, and Mike reminded me that we are in partners with New York State and Cortland County also. And they will, in the process either be voting on that, on this budget within the next few days or already have.
I'm over here, Jim. Cortland County approved the budget.
Okay, so we're
last Thursday evening.
And New York State has approved their portion of the New York State budget, so we're the last piece of the puzzle.
Actually, there's one more piece, which is SUNY. And that happens in September, but
that's your deal.
Tends to be fairly routine.
Okay.
Frank?
No, Jim answered my question as to the status of the Cortland County piece. Thank you.
Okay. And Carl, would you like to make any comments? Please go ahead.
Well, I'd be happy to elaborate on this, but it sounds like you've already kind of delved into it, and we've reviewed it in depth with the Budget Committee and, of course, in a session we had back over the college in May. So I just appreciate the continued support that you all provide for the college. I appreciate particularly the bump that we're getting from 1% and a couple of zeros we had before this over the last 3 or 4 years to the 3% this year. And as I did share with the Budget Committee, there's some legislative interest, as I understand it, a bill being introduced next year that would remove support for community colleges from your 2% cap, which might open up the possibility for maybe even a little bit more increase next year. I'm already beginning on next year's ask. But I think that could be beneficial for our sponsors, and when that time comes, I hope we can join together in advocating for that legislative change. So, again, appreciate your support. If there's any other questions, anything that you want me to kind of elaborate on more specifically, I'd be happy to do that.
Thanks very much, Carl. Any other comments or questions? Peter.
Carl, we've heard about this new program that's going to be in New York State about the coupling of economic activities with community colleges. Do you, or with all state colleges, do you see any opportunities for TC3 to participate in that? And and I've often wondered, in what way, if you did, in what way does it actually profit TC3?
That's a big question.
I know. I mean, it's very recent, and I would understand if you said you really haven't had a chance to understand it. But
that's partly 75% of my answer, okay? Because I was just on a conference call late yesterday afternoon with a chancellor and a fellow who's just joined the chancellor's staff who came from the governor's office, who was instrumental in putting this whole thing together. And at the 11th hour, not surprisingly, there were a lot of nuanced changes in how this is going to roll out from what was originally proposed that obviously responded to some legislative concerns and that sort of thing. So, but basically, college property and contiguous property, particularly if it's owned by a college entity, like our foundation, for example, it does own land both north and south of our campus, would be eligible for this, as would any parcels of land that we own for our extension centers. Obviously, our extension center downtown Ithaca, there's not a lot of vacant land around that parcel, but there is around our parcel in Cortland, not owned by the campus, okay, but that it's in a zone that would be eligible. So it's a long answer. I got an email just a little while ago, okay, from Arthur Armstrong wanting to explore with me ideas about how we can begin to think about this going forward. I don't have any answers beyond that. I think there's so many kinds of requirements that have to be met and threshold, I guess, entry points that would, the qualifications, I guess I should say, that it's hard to know right now where it might lead to. But we're certainly open to the possibilities. We're open to having discussions with it for businesses in our community that want to take a look at that or new businesses that are coming in. And I think we're also open to collaborating with other educational institutions in the community that would have an interest in wanting to collaborate with us in some way that might be strategically beneficial to the community. So I think we're open to exploring ideas and opportunities. at this point there's anything more specific that I can offer.
Thanks.
Thank you, Carl. Anyone else? Ready to vote on Resolution G. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
That's unanimous. Thank you very much.
Let me just say, Carl, thank you, as always, for a very good presentation in the early spring of the budget and again, explaining to the committee and the public what good things Tompkins Community College does, and we are totally supportive of what you are all doing out there. We think you're doing a great job. So.
Thank you.
Let me do my next reso. It's an approval of the appropriation of surplus funds, Tompkins Cortland Community College, and this is a version with a two-word change. The one you have, we're omitting the word in and putting of its in, and that was suggested by a legislator. And I would move that resolution.
Seconded by Brian. Any discussion? All in favor, Resolution H, with that change, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
I believe that's any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. Julie?
Could I just ask that my percentage information go into the minute? I'll give it to you.
On the previous resolution?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anything else for Carl?
No.
All right.
No. Thank you, Carl.
Very Thanks good. Very much.
Thank you again.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
And unless someone wants to do my next resolution, or we can go back to the regular agenda.
Why don't we... I'm going to go back to the agenda.
All right.
Come back to
okay.
Budget and capital in order. I don't see any other staff.
Again, thank you all for that and allowing us to move it forward at this point.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jim. All right, then we are up to municipal officials. Dan Klein? Not tonight. All right. Thank you very much. Legislators? Anyone? Frank? Mike? Pam?
Thank you, Martha. Two things tonight. First, as a TCAT board member and a member of the Budget Committee, I just want to remind you that you probably have received in your mailboxes an invitation to the annual budget presentation, July 31st at 11:30 at the Public Library. You'll probably be receiving a follow-up call from TCAT to get a head count as to how many people are coming. Joe has been invited, Rick has been invited, and perhaps David has been invited. I think we want to make sure that Rick's on the straight and narrow. The other is... a little bit of a consumer alert, one more or another one. I don't know how many of you have Time Warner Cable, but in the next, you do, Jim?
Sure. Whole world then.
And I know, Mike, we went to the Cable Commission a couple of months back and brought a couple of issues up that you and Herb Engman are a part of. I assume that you were all treated to the same letter that I received. It's a general letter to the subscribers saying that anyone with an analog TV will no longer be able to access certain stations, including the government access station, educational station, and public access station, because they'll only be broadcast in digital. If you want to keep your analog TV, you can, for a monthly fee of 99 cents a month, you can have, after the free period, there is an opportunity to get a free gizmo to put by your TV. But by the end of the year, they're going to be charging you about $1 a month for this box. The reason I'm bringing this up is back in 2008... And I know some of you think I hang on to everything. Well, I did in this case. The FCC ruling that set this in motion, back then they were very careful to say No one was going to be forced to get rid of their analog TVs because they didn't want to start an onslaught of people dumping their TVs and having to purchase a digital television. And some of us that were involved in the not necessarily the decision, but in the conversation, were concerned about anyone who's on a limited budget or limited income having to either incur an extra cost, which this is, or dump their TV to buy another television. Well, the continuing onslaught, last year, Time Warner changed another couple of stations, and the reason, again, that I'm bringing this up is the local cable commission, which is unfortunately almost powerless to, unless, Mike, you can correct me, they were very involved in hearing us out, because a number of constituents that I have really don't want to go out and have to buy a digital TV set. They are concerned about a dollar here and a dollar there for these converter boxes. But the Cable Commission heard the last time through that the basic tier, which I believe consists of 22 stations, was reduced because there are a number of blank stations now. Well, there are going to be three more because you can only access these if you have that converter. So one of the individuals that came to Mike's group a couple of months back indicated that they're...
I just want to mention that's a TCOG group, the Council of Government Subcommittee.
Okay, but it is the cable. It's a group looking into the franchises and whatnot. And yes. And thank you for doing that. I think that this is, again, nibbling around, a dollar here, a dollar there. It's like the NYSEG extra fee to keep AES profitable or at least working until they decide what to do with the plant, regardless of what we heard tonight. And the PSC weighs in on that. This is an indirect loss. This is a direct loss of service by anyone who subscribes through Time Warner, unless you agree to do one of those two things. And I just want to bring it to your attention because, once again, people who are going to be affected by this, most of them probably won't even say what I said because they're going to have to interpret this and get a hold of Time Warner in order to get an interpretation. But you might be hearing some of this from your constituents, and I thought you'd appreciate knowing about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Mike?
I was very troubled by an article on the front page of the Ithaca Journal today. I think it was out of Gannett in Albany. And it has to do with an issue that has been out there for many, many years, and that is home rule. Municipalities in the state spar about whether there is the authority at the local level under this constitution, state constitution, to take certain actions, or whether they are preempted by the state. One of the things that have come to the forefront, as we all know, is the hydrofracking issue. And some of the towns, including my own, town of Dryden, have banned hydrofracking or as part of heavy industrialization through its zoning process. There are three organizations, main organizations, that represent various municipalities and are basically our education and lobby groups at the state level. And they are our own Association of Counties, the Conference of Mayors and other municipal officials for cities and villages, and probably the most powerful of the groups is the Association of Towns. And the article told us that there is suddenly a split in the that organization over the position that association took in filing a brief in support of the towns that had used their municipal home rule authority to use zoning ordinances to ban hydrofracking and other heavy industrialization. It's coming out of the Southern Tier area, where we know there are some towns that would very much like to see that happen. I think that we need to keep track of this, because if we see the towns, some of the towns all of a sudden saying we shouldn't have home rule authority, I think that's a serious blow to municipalities and the constitutional division that we have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Pam.
Well, I have a couple of things tonight. One of them is I would like this was a resolution that was passed by the TCAT board in appreciation for Kathy Luz Herrera's service, and it took a long time to get it together. So I'd like to present this to Kathy, and I'd like to read it. It says, whereas Kathy Luz Herrera, Tompkins County legislator, has devoted over 12 years to supporting and enhancing public transportation in Tompkins County, and whereas Kathy has contributed her insights and expertise into improving TCAT, including its human resources processes and procedures, transit planning, audit processes, and downtown Ithaca transit amenities development, and whereas Kathy demonstrated ardent concern and care for both the community and TCAT while fulfilling positions as a director on the TCAT, Inc. Board of Directors from 2005 to the present, and as a director of the predecessor TCAT joint venture from 2001 and 2004. And whereas Kathy served as chairperson of the TCAT Board of Directors in 2007 and served on its executive committee from 2005 to 2008, and whereas Kathy served ably on the following board committees, the Center City Project Committee that led to the Seneca Street Station rehabilitation and opening of the flagship Green Street Station, the Audit Committee, the Transit Services Committee, and the Human Resources Committee. And whereas Kathy's hard work and advocacy while serving TCAT and her other community affiliations have greatly benefited TCAT and all residents of Tompkins County, now therefore be it resolved that the TCAT Inc. Board recognizes the many and significant contributions Kathy has made to TCAT, and be it further resolved that the TCAT Inc. Board extends its sincere gratitude and appreciation to Kathy for her leadership and dedicated service. So I would like to present this to Kathy.
Thank you very much, Pam. That's terrific.
Kathy,
do you want to? What?
I'm sorry, I had one more thing.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, wait. Kathy Luce, do you want to say anything?
Oh, I'm sorry.
And respond?
I'd just like to thank the board and the employees of TCAT. They're still out there working hard. I see them every day, wave and smile. They're doing a great job for our community, and I really appreciate this award. I didn't know I did all that.
Thank you.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, Frank Pro, is that what that is?
That's a
good
thing.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
You deserve
it.
And Pam, go ahead.
Okay. This is a little bit more serious. Public employees deserve the respect of the elected officials whose work they support. Our success as a county is in large part due to the competence and caring of our county employees. We legislators talk and legislate, they implement. So I was very disturbed when I heard of an instance yesterday where a colleague treated a county employee disrespectfully. That kind of behavior demeans the employee, it demeans the stature of our county legislature, it demeans Tompkins County's well-regarded image, and violates the rules of the legislature. County legislators supervise only 4 employees: county administrator, county attorney, clerk of the legislature, and comptroller. We have no business admonishing or pointing fingers at any employee. Because this was not the first time I had heard about this behavior, I felt compelled to call the employee affected by this particular incident and apologize. I was ashamed that he/she had been subjected to an unprovoked, undeserved attack. This kind of behavior must stop. The good name of Tompkins County is at stake. Most importantly, the morale of our workforce is at risk. I call on my colleagues to join me to condemn this behavior and to reassure county employees of our respect and our appreciation for their hard work and dedication.
Thank you, Pam. Anyone else like to address your colleagues? Our colleagues? Kathy Lewis?
Thank you. I'm thinking about what Faye Gagakis had to say, and I imagine that this was spoken about at a previous legislature meeting, but as a member of the board of Tompkins Community Action, I want to express my grief and the sense of loss that we all in the community have at Harriet's untimely and unfortunate death. She was, as anybody who knows her or knows of her, she's somebody that lit up the room, very capable, very approachable, just a wonderful soul. And I appreciate Faye's remarks. I think many of us have, even those of us that may not ride bicycles regularly, have really been thinking about the importance of addressing the concerns that bicycle riders have. I'd like to also express my condolences to the family and to the driver of the vehicle involved. There's no sense, really, in my opinion, pointing fingers. I think this was an unfortunate accident all around, and that as a community, as Faye said, it's time for us to learn from this tragedy.
Thank you. Anyone else? Nobody has any parades to announce or anything to cheer us up.
There is a parade. Wait.
There's a parade.
You thought you were going to assume.
Go ahead, Frank.
July 13th. Come one, come all. Danby Fun Days and Parade. That the thanks to the folks with the on the tourism board. Some of the funding for that parade comes from the tourism group. So if you have an opportunity and you find yourself needing a chicken dinner or wanting to ride a fire truck or whatever, shoot a bow and arrow, and Mike wants to do that, come to Danby July 13th, Saturday. The parade starts at 10. And my colleague on the Danby Town Board, Dan, I don't know, Dan is a stilt walker. I don't know, I didn't see the list yet, but you may be in that as a stilt walker.
Not this year.
Not this year? Anyway, but Dan's got that ability. Come on out to Danby. Thank you for reminding me, Mark.
You're welcome. Thank you, Frank. Kathy Lewis?
I think I just made a Freudian slip in my previous announcement. I said TCAT. Actually, it's Tompkins Community Action, the board that I serve on. Harriet is on, was on staff of the Tompkins Community Action. Did I say TCA? Okay. Sorry. I was replaying it in my mind. I was like, we're all shocked. Okay, thanks.
All right. Thank you. I would like to just, in my report, a couple things. Just thank our staff who helped get Tompkins County's residents and drivers through the recent rains. I think Marshall Lynch was part of getting information out. Lee Shurtleff and the Highway Department have all been sort of working overtime to make sure conditions are safe and looking out for places where they weren't so safe. And it was wonderful to see the sun today. So, and just a brief comment on the Cougar Power Plant. For anybody who's listening, and this happens all the time, we have passionate people coming to public privilege and speaking, and then they leave and they don't hear what we may have to say. Just people should have no question that the Tompkins County Legislature does not make a decision on this issue. This is up to the Public Service Commission of New York State, what happens with the plant. We may or may not decide to weigh in as a matter of record or trying to influence a decision, but this is not our decision. I just want to make sure people knew that for sure. So that's all I have for my report. Except I got to get rid of this cough. County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Martha. My report is short tonight as well. My favorite topic, not at least one that I brought back to this body several times, is to post you on the living wage group. We had our ninth meeting of the six-meeting series the other day. I think we're making good progress in wrapping up our discussion about living wage and what we should do with respect to policy and procedure. I believe within the next two or three weeks, we should come together again as a group to look at some draft recommendations. With that, bring it to a close, and then present our report and our findings to two committees, GO and Budget, and then ask you to consider the recommendations we've made. So we are making progress, and I think we'll be done before our deadline of the end of July. Another progress report, I'll be a little bit coy here, but the human rights process, the search for a new director, is wrapping up. I'm being coy only because there are certain notifications that will need to be given, but the search committee has done its work. A unanimous recommendation by the committee. My expectation is I'll be back to you at your next meeting, the second meeting in July, asking for a confirmation of an appointment at that time. So I'll be sharing some additional details with you as the days go by. But that's another one where we've made very good progress, and I think we're now to the wrap-up stage of that. And that's good news because it's been a while since we've had a director there. I think you'll be very, very pleased with the candidate that has been recommended. I just wanted to spend a minute or two, and we'll report more to Budget, Capital, and Personnel at its next committee. I had a great meeting today to talk to a group that was pulled together to develop the planning program. You recall that as a part of the 2013 budget, you allocated almost $70,000 for a training initiative that was aimed at proficiency and career development. I just wanted to give you a quick update on that because the report I got today was very good. Some of the money that was allocated has gone to supervisory training, which will become a part of what we do in the future. So over the last several months, 40 of our supervisors have gone through a structured training program, two groups of 20, on some of the basics of supervision. And the responses we've gotten from all the people who have participated are very, very positive. They learned a lot through this, and they appreciated the chance to work with other people who are also county supervisors. The plan is to build on this and to go from a level one program that we've now started to a level two to give this same group of individuals kind of advanced training and supervision, and that will happen later this year. And then over the course of time, we expect, again, for this to be a part of what we do, to have supervisory training at kind of a beginning level and then an advanced level for every county supervisor. So they're all trained in a consistent way. They all get good background information on how to be an effective supervisor. So I'm very pleased with the way that's going, and I think it bodes very well for how we will approach supervision in the future. We've always said that's the hardest job in the world, your first supervisory job, to go from being a friend and a colleague to someone who has to supervise, and we want to provide people the right tools to help them make that transition. Another training initiative has happened in the highway department. It just ended. All of our field employees in highway have gone through a training that has been focused on safety and proficiency. And for most of them, it's a refresher, things like snow and ice and how to handle all that. But also, it has taught all of our employees how to operate the heavy pieces of equipment that are in that department. Even folks who right now are only motor equipment operators, they're not heavy equipment operators, but they aspire to a promotion. And the way you can do that is become trained in some of these equipment items. So it has just finished. We opened this up, and we invited folks from other municipalities to be involved at a fee, so we were at break-even. Danby and Dryden did have some of their folks participate with us. So, again, the response from the people involved in it, and it was required of all these employees, was extremely positive, especially the motor equipment operators who had a chance to really lay a foundation for advancement there. There will be other trainings to follow. We're looking at meeting management for managers. We can all do better at running meetings. We want to impart that training in managers. And there's a lot of other kind of lower level, not lower level, but smaller training initiatives a part of this as well. So I will tell you, I think we're getting our $70,000 worth out of training. I think it's going to pay off throughout the organization. And I appreciate the support the legislature gave in making this money available, and I kind of warning you in advance to expect it to be a sustained part of the budget that we'll present for 2014. I think that's my report.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks.
Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I have no report.
Thank you. Finance Director Rick Snyder.
Thank you very much. Finance Department, we have two things to bring to your attention tonight in our report. The auction of 20 tax foreclosed properties held on Monday, June 24th, 2013, yielded proceeds of $356,825. The county foreclosures alone yielded proceeds of $267,825. And if you include the current taxes collected on these properties, the county's total revenue amounts to $291,410. We anticipate a total gain of about $100,000 after paying the expenses. So that pretty much brings you up to date on where we are at figuring on the auctions, on the properties that sold in auction. The second part of the report I have, what I just gave to Catherine was a copy of our bond sale, and as you know, we just got a Moody's update on our rating, and that rating was reaffirmed at a AA1 stable rating. But in light of that, or in spite of that being a very good rating, the county's $4.1 million serial bonds were sold on June 26th at a net interest rate of 3.399%. This rate was considerably higher than the 2.5% interest rate that we had estimated. The term of the bonds is 17 years or until July 15th, 2030. And a quote from the Wall Street Journal article dated June 26, 2013, titled, "Cost of Public Projects is Rising and Pain Will Be Felt for Years," reads this way. Market conditions had driven the interest rate on a typical 10-year municipal bond up by more than 1 percentage point since the beginning of May. The rate for longer maturity bonds were more than 1.25 percentage points higher. This was written on the same day that we sold our bonds. The county also sold, and this is a little bit brighter news, $6 million of bands or bond anticipation notes at a net interest rate of 0.358%. And we have more details on the bond sale if you are interested, and I did leave a copy of the official statement of the bonds for her registry. If there aren't any questions, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Rick. Any questions? Well, that's quite a difference. I'm sure we can't get the 17 years at the other rate. That'd be great. Okay. All right. David, did you want to add anything? All right. Thank you very much.
Peter.
I'm sure there's no answer to this question, but can you explain to me in layman's terms what it is that drove the interest rate up? I mean, is it a concern or is it what?
There's a course you can pick up.
One of you want to take that? Okay.
Well, I'm not an economist, and so I hate to really tread on in the area of speculation, but a lot of what happens in the markets, whether it be the bond market or the stock market, has a great impact on what we're doing. And also, there's pending legislation at the federal level that makes investors skittish about municipal bonds to begin with. That legislation has been hanging out there for the last year and a half, and there's a good chance that they could be taking away some of the tax advantages that comes for investors who like to purchase municipal bonds. So that part of the market is slowly being eroded away because skittish investors are staying away from that. What's happened most recently, though, and many of you have followed that with your stock portfolio or with your just concern on the economy in general, is that when Ben Bernanke spoke approximately 3 weeks ago, the markets took a tumble. And it seems that whenever somebody, as in his position at the Federal Reserve, makes a comment, it sends jitters throughout the market. And whether those comments are substantive comments or just words, they seem to have a very dramatic impact, as they did in the week that we happened to be selling bonds. But if you go back and look not just from his comments and how they have affected the economy, you go back about 60 days and see how just through various different turns of the economy that the interest rates were slowly being driven up over the last 60 days. And had we been able to sell the bonds perhaps 60 days or 30 days ago, we would have been much better poised. But I believe, Peter, it's mostly market conditions like that have these kind of impacts. And about the only thing you can do is make a decision on that very day. Are we going to sell the bonds or are we going to wait? And, of course, we moved ahead with the sale, thinking that there's just higher interest rates on the horizon.
Can I ask another follow-up question? I don't quite really understand how it works. I would think when we're selling our bonds, that we would say what the interest rate was, and then people would either buy it or wouldn't. How does this go? Do you keep adjusting it, or
no,
what?
The bonds are not marked at any interest rate. We might put together a prospectus. We might have an idea of what we think the bonds might be selling at, and that's pretty much the material that's circulated with the financial advisor and the finance department. We speculate. We put together what we think the bond interest rate is going to be, and that's how we come up with a debt service schedule for budgeting purposes. But these bonds are competitively bid, and so I know for a fact in this particular issue we had 5 bids.
I see. Okay.
And those bids come back to the financial advisor, and they rate them, and then, of course,
and you take the highest bid.
You know, there's things like premiums and discounts that may affect the stated amount of the interest rate, but they come up with that net interest cost for you, and they can tell you who the lowest bidder is as far as the lowest interest rate. So they are competitively bid, and it's not based on a structure that we put together or any whim or whimsy or anything like that. It's competitively bid.
Okay, thanks. That helps.
Thank you very much, Rick. Appreciate that. Are there any items to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right. For the consent agenda, first I have an advisory board appointment. Alan Teeter to the Soil and Water Conservation District. And then there's Resolution A. Any of these to be pulled off? Pat?
I was moving that.
Oh, I didn't have to. Let me read them first. Okay. Yeah, that was just the first.
Okay.
Okay. Resolution A, ID 4261, authorization to execute quitclaim deed, properties redeemed before county auction. Resolution B, ID 4262, authorization to execute quitclaim deeds, sale of foreclosure properties at public auction. Resolution C. Resolution D. The revised. Kathy, I'm a little confused here. Am I to move the revised version that's in people's packet on D? If there's no objection to adding the revision that's in your packet, adding the address for the lease. ID 4242, authorization to renew a 5-year lease agreement for the Tompkins County Board of Elections. Pat moves the consent agenda, seconded by...
Are you including the advisory board appointment as well?
Yeah, I said that first.
Okay, sorry.
Confused some people. So moved by Pat, seconded by Frank.
I'm sorry, I don't understand what the decision was on Resolution C.
It is pulled off.
Okay.
Julie pulled it off the agenda.
Okay.
Off the consent agenda. But D, there was no objection to moving the revised.
Oh, hold on a second. Can I look at that?
sure. It was D is adding the, it's in the resolve, adding.
Okay, I see. Yep.
All right. Moved by Pat, seconded by Frank. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. First committee report. Economic Development Committee, Will Burbank, Chair.
Thank you. We have met, not met since our last meeting, but we will be meeting on the 11th of July, which is next Thursday, normal time, 3:30, Old Jail. And if you come to our meeting, you will hear the proposed budget for the Strategic Tourism STPP Planning Board.
I can never keep that in my brain.
Thank you. They come to us first, and they will be presenting the budget in detail. And if you'd like to hear sort of what that, where all that money goes, and how they're proposing to do it next year, it'll be a good time to come. And we will also be having Heather Filiberto come to discuss what she knows, or what it is generally known about the governor's new tax-free zones, which has a new name. It was initially Tax-Free New York. I think it's now Startup New York or something like that. Plus sort of related similar or things that people have heard about but don't know a whole lot, such as the hot zones. So those are two items that I am aware of that we're going to be talking about. We do have one resolution, and that's an appropriation from contingent fund. This is resolution E revised in your red folders. Appropriation from contingent fund terminal pay reimbursement workforce development one-stop center. And I so move.
Seconded by Mike. Is there a discussion? Frank?
Yeah, I don't want to second guess Will, but just this. This resolution and this process changes or precipitated and will precipitate a review because of the manner in which we handle enterprise organizations, as I remember. And normally this falls out of the normal sequence of reimbursement. And I remember from our discussion at Economic Development that we need to review that procedure. And we went ahead with this, but Will, maybe you'd be better
at this. I should defer to Joe. Who,
yeah, in policy, there are exceptions to the rule that we pull money out of contingency to make these terminal pay arrangements. And they were intended to relate to the enterprise fund. So solid waste is an enterprise fund, kind of a self-standing business organization. Same thing with the airport. So there's an exception policy. We don't. The general fund doesn't make this kind of a contribution to the airport for terminal pay. The third was workforce investment and the one-stop center. So they were really characterized as an enterprise fund. And at the time the policy was written, they probably either were or were close to it because the federal government paid for everything. That isn't the case anymore. So the county does support both these organizations. They are very much tied to the general fund. Your point, Frank, is this, in fact, is an exception to the rule. And in the resolution, it notes that we are making that exception. And it is something that we ought to look at in terms of revising the general policy to take them out of that same basket that solid waste and the airport are in for the future. So this is an exception to the rule.
Thank you.
I have Dooley and then Kathy Luce.
That was the reason I suggested additional language in the resolve to make it clear that this is a waiver for this one retirement pending some change in policy. It should not be read as the change in policy permanently. So I'd make that amendment.
So I think
that
was the revised.
I didn't hear you say that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we substituted the revised.
That was what was moved. Kathy Luce?
That was it.
Okay. So, understood? People on the same page on this? Any other discussion? All in favor of the revised resolution E?
Aye.
Never mind. We need a short form roll call. Sorry.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes. I mean, aye.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. Okay. Thank you, Will.
And that concludes my report.
Any other any questions for Will about anything else? Frank?
Yeah, thanks, Martha. Will, this may be something that you're not on the airport.
I'm not.
Committee. Maybe, Joel, I'm going to not mean to sideswipe you, but there was an article in the Ithaca Journal about economic, about the, you know, Ilya Casper's monthly write-up. And in his article, he said the May implanings, the airport numbers had gone up and we were doing better.
The rate of decline has gone down.
Okay, because in a companion article on the same page, yeah, it said that they had declined. Yeah. So can you say that again?
Yeah, I will, and I can... I'll try from memory to give that some definition. When the sequester hit, our numbers plummeted. Our planes dropped by, I recall, 16% in the month where sequestration was announced, and there was a widespread incorrect belief that we were going to be stopping commercial air travel out of the airport. People booked other places. As information became better, and as the sequestration impact was eliminated, our numbers are improving. I think the last month we were down by 7% as opposed to the 16% month-to-month that we were down right after the sequester. So, again, we're still down from this time last year, but that rate of decline has shrunk appreciably over the last couple of months.
Thanks for clearing
that. Does
that
make sense? Okay.
Thank you. Thanks, Will.
Thank you. Any other questions for Will? All right, thank you. Mike Lane, Capital Plan Review Committee Chair.
We haven't met since our last meeting. You may want to pay attention and take a look at the progress at the Governor Tompkins building. The furniture has arrived, including the chairs that we talked about and which eight of you voted for. I think you'll find that there is less storage space over there in the drawers, et cetera, than we have over here. But the railings are up. There were audio engineering people working in there this afternoon when I went over. Some of the panels for the acoustical quality have been installed in the back of the chamber. As was recommended by the engineers. We're still hoping to have the first meeting of August be when we occupy those chambers. I spoke with Arel Lamero today about that to see whether we could still be on schedule. He was going to be speaking with the architects and the contractors, and we'll be bringing us up to date as to whether we're still on schedule for that. Maybe we'll be pushed back, maybe we won't. But we do want to try to have a couple of meetings by a couple of volunteer committees there to have a little practice using the new electronics before we start with our broadcast. Our next meeting of the committee is July 10th.
Thank you, Mike. And committees, you mean that they would sit at the central desks, because that's where the...
Yes. That's the idea. I know we wouldn't have the full legislature there, but we could give the folks who operate the cameras or operate the control panels and things an opportunity to see how those things are working with actual people sitting in the seats.
So will CPR committee be able to meet over there?
I hope so. That was a question I posed to Arel today, and he said, I'll get back to you.
Okay. Great. Any questions for Mike? All right. Thank you very much. Government Operations Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yes, thank you. The Government Operations Committee met on June 25th. Most of the things that we covered in our committee discussion, or many of them, I should say, are included in resolutions that we'll be dealing with this evening, so I won't go into those right now. In addition to things that are on the resolutions, we did consider the items that were brought to us by the Ethics Advisory Board, and the ethics policy will be coming back again to our next meeting. The other thing that I wanted to mention, two other things I've gotten to mention, is that we had a report from Ed Marks about the proposal for the development of the Biggs property. It was a very nice presentation and gave us a lot of information about what they're thinking about that project, so that was good. We also had a report from Aurora Valenti and Maureen Reynolds on the Tompkins Shared Services Electronic Records Repository, the Shared Services User Group Agreement, and bylaws. So that was interesting, too. That's about it. Do you want to do resolutions now?
Sure. Any questions first? Any questions for Pat? Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Pat, since the ethics policy or the proposed policy is coming to the next legislative meeting, I was asked if I had any questions about particular sections to draft some language.
Mm-hmm.
Would I get that language to you?
Get it? Well, now it would have to come to the legislature because it's past committee, so you would want to bring it for when we have the discussion. I think that's correct, isn't it, Kathy? Yeah.
I assume Kathy's nodding, right?
Yes. Sorry.
Thanks. Thank you.
The other thing I forgot to mention is that our next meeting is on July 23rd. I'm sorry, what?
This is in your packet. I didn't know if you'd seen this. It's in your folder. It's the resolution, some suggestions that Dooley had included here for the web.
This is resolution C that we pulled off? Okay. So.
Okay. You said your next meeting is what date? I'm sorry.
July 23rd, 10 okay. to 12.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So, yes, you have resolution F and resolution C.
Right.
This is resolution F.
Right. So starting with Resolution C, you have a revised version in your packet. Was there something else, Dooley, besides the change that you wanted to make on C?
No, that's why I pulled it off.
Okay. So if you want to look at the version that you have in your packet, I'll move Resolution C, authorizing the clerk of the legislature to file a certificate designating the Secretary of State as the agent for service of notices of claim.
Seconded by Mike. Discussion?
Is it the revised one that you need?
As revised.
Thank you.
The one from your packet.
I can't.
Excuse me.
Yes, Kathy Lewis.
That's a suggested revisions. It's not accepted by committee yet.
Correct.
Okay.
Now. Correct. It's my understanding that, especially if this is not a substantive change, that the chair can choose to accept those suggestions and move that resolution instead of the language as the committee passed.
That's fine. I'm just happy to see it come before the legislature.
Okay. Ready to vote? All in favor of revised resolution C, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. That's unanimous.
And then resolution F, which is ID number 4158, approving revisions to administrative policy 03-01, benefits for management staff.
Moved and seconded by Mike. And Dooley.
I don't know whether the slight change in the reference description on the first page of the actual policy is considered substantive or not. It came about after my discussion with the county administrator. I don't think it changes anything, but it's not up to me.
Does everybody, you should have that in your packet, the revised suggestions submitted by Legislator Kiefer.
Is that
it's just the one. The
reference?
Language that red?
Yes.
Okay.
Is it the red?
It's the black. Underline boldface. Kathy uses underline boldface for that.
Billy, would you read?
I think it's the part that says on the web of personnel
yes.
department and or.
Yes.
And then includes the word department instead of office at the end of the sentence.
Okay.
It's in the reference section.
Okay. So the question is that substantive or can we I would assume that that's not substantive.
I'm sorry, I haven't found the suggested revision to Resolution F yet. I see on packet page 10 the Resolution F. Oh, it's in the policy itself, the revisions.
Right.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of redlined revisions. How many of those are the suggested changes?
All right, that wasn't stapled in the packet, but it's in the folder.
It was in the red folder.
It was in your red folder, though it wasn't stapled
in your
packet.
Thanks for explaining that. So these are not as adopted at GO. These are revised changes. Oh, wait, I see. The top of this page says revised suggestions submitted by Legislator Kiefer. Are these the only suggested revisions to the policy?
The part that's in red was approved by the committee.
Got it. Thank you.
The underlying part in black, bold, under reference, the second section, is the part that Dooley is requesting that we add now, and I think we've asked Jonathan if it's substantive.
Correct? Got it. Thank you.
Okay. And it's not substantive, so we could go ahead with this. All right, Frank.
Will you take? Can we ask other questions?
No, everybody else, but not you, Frank. Yes, sir. What's your question?
Let me general statement. Since this is the one that changes the manner in which compensatory time and everything goes. I'm going to ask the rest of these, but can Joe give us the Reader's Digest version on what finally happened with that? Second, under item Roman 5, packet page 13, health insurance, my question on item C, it denotes how much the county will pay for health insurance for single and family, da-da-da-da-da. My question is, suppose that percentage changes. We simply revise the policy. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. The other is, you're going to explain Roman 6, compensatory time, including the rolling bank basis.
Yes.
And could you also explain a little more under Roman 7, terminal pay, item A, second paragraph. Notwithstanding the terms outlined above and notwithstanding policy, da-da-da-da, unused compensatory time will not be paid. That probably bleeds into the overall explanation.
This goes back some time, and Frank, I know this has been one you've asked about for a long time, at least since I've been here, about the policy of paying managers for accrued compensatory time when they leave county employment. In fact, by tradition, we have. So when a manager leaves, there can be compensation if it's been earned for unused vacation time, for unused personal time, and for unused compensatory time. So when a manager works over 40 hours a week, they're eligible to earn comp time. And up to a maximum of, I think it was 3 weeks comp time, you could be paid for that upon separation. And that's been an issue for the legislature for a long, long time. So a couple of years ago, we said, let's form a work group and let's take a look at it. We did. And we had Jay Franklin chair a group of 12 people, 4 legislators, 8 department heads. And they looked at what other governments do. They looked at the overall package. They looked at what seemed fair and arrived at a conclusion which is now embodied in this policy, which, by the way, has been vetted with all of the county's managers. So county managers have had a chance to look at this some time ago to offer comment on this policy change. I think I received 2, and both. One was positive, one was kind of neutral. So it's been through that process, and the outcome is that managers will still be able to accrue comp time. So if you worked over 40 hours, you can still accrue time up to a maximum. I think it's a 3 weeks pay. It's 3 weeks. So you can accrue that. But at separation, you can't be paid for it. So it goes to more like a flex time schedule. So this is eliminating the payment of accrued comp time when managers leave county employment. Now, we've set the clock at a year from now because there was a fairness issue in the belief that some people may be planning to retire, so they haven't been taking time off, they've been working overtime, it's in the bank, and they wouldn't have time to be able to take that con time as time. So it sets the clock for a year from now when this would take place. But a year from now, when a manager leaves, there will not be a payment for accrued comp time. So, again, it's taken a long time to get here. A lot of good faith by a lot of county managers and folks who have taken a look at it. And this does answer the question that you ask me at many meetings. Is this the policy change that you've been looking for with respect to comp time? Indeed it is. And that practice will end a year from now.
So the rolling bank, if follow up, Martha?
Yeah.
The rolling bank item under Romans 6, that does say there that they have to use that during their term of employment.
That's right.
Because, okay.
That's right.
And I really want to.
Your maximum accrual is 3 weeks of time. So if you work a 40-hour week, the maximum amount you can accrue in comp time is 120 hours.
Thanks for sticking with this, and thanks to the special committee, that even to Jim Dennis for being on that special committee. Yeah.
Thank you. This is rather a big deal. It's buried in a lot of words, and the public is not going to be looking at this, I'm pretty sure. But it is it's a change in policy that's going to really make a difference.
And thanks to the employees and the departments that participated, because this is a major change. The one disappointment that I have is that the longevity payments are crept in there. But
so everyone knows. Nothing else changed. The sole focus is comp time.
Carol.
Yeah, so I see a couple of references in here to what happens to accrued but unused sick leave. But I don't see a section about sick leave. The question really is what do we do with sick leave? But it looks to me as though we just expect our managers to never get sick. Is that's a requirement of being a manager for Tompkins County?
We don't have a traditional sick leave anymore. So we don't get. Did you want to speak to that?
Yeah.
Okay.
We do actually have a sick leave policy. It's a separate policy. But managers don't get sick leave at all. It was replaced by disability. So the only people who work for the county who get sick leave are blue collar. So white collar doesn't get sick leave. Management doesn't get sick leave. And there is a separate policy on sick leave.
And if there's a reference to sick leave in terms of accruals and things, there are managers who, before there was a change in the disability policy, did earn and accrue sick time many years ago. And some of that is still on the books. So if there's a reference in here, it's really kind of a legacy reference. As Jonathan has said, everything is now on a disability basis.
So can you explain something about the rationale, why we group the two together rather than separate, as many employers do, sick and disability, which would be a longer-term absence?
Well, I wasn't here then. Jonathan was here at that time. I'd be speculating what caused it. I think it was a recognition that if an employee comes to the county and hasn't earned a lot of sick time and has a catastrophic illness, that person has a very difficult set of circumstances. So there came a time when that sick time policy, a traditional you earn 6 or 10 days a year, whatever, was replaced by a disability policy, which says if you are demonstrably ill, if you're unable to come to work, you are allowed to remain out of work and compensated during the period of that illness. And it's, I think it's up to, what,
six months.
6 months that you can take. So it's up to managers to be able to manage that, and they do. And we've looked at time taken, old versus new, and new goes back many years with disability. There doesn't appear to be a significant difference in time taken. So it's managed pretty well. But kind of back to your question, the reason that you don't see reference to sick time is because it's been replaced by this disability policy.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. Are we ready to vote on Resolution F? as in your packets. All in favor, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Anything
thank
else,
you.
Pat?
No, that's the end of my report. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
Our committee met yesterday. We have very lively meetings. I invite you all to come. It's always the first Monday of the month. We did pass two resolutions, but since we meet the day before our meeting, we, unless it's really timely, we hold them over till the next time. So those will come to you next time. We heard an update about the planning for the update of the comprehensive plan from Joan Jerkovich, and they are looking at how they are defining the scope of the updates, the content, starting to look at the content, and most, I suppose, spent most time talking about the outreach effort that will be made, which will be through the municipalities, through online tools, and public meetings. So there'll be plenty of opportunity to weigh in. We heard a report on the seventh round of the housing fund. You'll recall we have our housing affordability and trust programs, and while there were no projects that at this point require action by the legislature, there are two projects that the housing fund board approved with the city and Cornell money, and that those two are the Amici House, which is a project of Tompkins Community Action, and scattered site construction through the trust program for INHS. And again, that was city and Cornell money that's going to go into that. We heard a report by Ed Marks on the Biggs property proposal, and people should be aware that there was a public meeting held a few weeks ago, and there was enough interest that they'll be holding a second meeting on July 10th at 6:30 in the evening at the Museum of the Earth. The Biggs, you know, we have our land that we own up near the hospital, the former Biggs building, Better Housing, and a housing outfit called NRP responded to our RFP. They are proposing to build 60 units of affordable housing that would be at 30, 60, and 90%, various of the units of the median income. And a particular focus of that is going to be energy efficiency issues that came up. It's going to be a tax credit program proposal. So it will be contingent, moving forward will be contingent on the NRP group getting their tax credit approved. Issues that have came up at the first meeting included traffic issues, the concentration of affordable housing in that area on West Hill, and other various questions, so people will have another chance to come out and hear about that. We had a very interesting report by Peter Bardaglio about a project called Architecture 2030 Districts. There are a group of architects nationally who have embarked on a mission to think about how architecture can build in, how architecture will affect and will change over the next few decades, and what are the ways that they could use architecture to influence, in particular, climate change kinds of issues, as well as other community sustainability issues. Through sharing resources. So they have a notion of, across the nation, communities are being encouraged to band together, establish these districts called 2030 districts that would encourage the participants within those districts to group together and address some of these issues together. And Peter is looking for at ways that that might be implemented in downtown Ithaca. He's interested in having the county, because we have some buildings in downtown Ithaca. He's interested in knowing if we'd be interested in being part of this district. I think for us it would be easy. We've already instituted a lot of the changes that they're talking about trying to encourage. So our participating in that district would up their numbers and maybe help provide incentive for some of the other businesses and organizations downtown. The other thing that came up that we might be able to do in the future would be, if this happens in Ithaca or in any of our other municipalities, to, as a legislature, help provide stimulation in terms of stimulus, in terms of maybe just little awards. You know, we award the Youth of the Month. Maybe we can award the Business of the Month for those who have made their buildings more energy efficient. There'll be more on that in the future. You've heard a little. Well, let me talk a little bit. So the EMC, the Environmental Management Council, has been very active on two fronts. We heard a little bit tonight from people who are concerned about the power plant. We're all aware of the power plant. The EMC, you should know, has held a series of public meetings that they have reported back to us about and let us know that they were holding about the power plant. They had Jerry Goodenow and Doug Roll came and presented, and they encouraged people to come. And then just tonight, you all had received in your email an announcement about a meeting that they held with the folks from the Sierra Club who've also weighed in on that project. And that was a very interesting meeting. The attorney from the Sierra Club, Josh Berman, was participating from Washington. I think I will ask Scott Doyle, who had those slides. He's staffed to the EMC, and he had the slides on his computer to send those around to people. So far, the sense that I have is that we are not weighing in as a legislature. Folks were in here tonight asking us to do that. If I hear back from enough of you that you want me to revisit that, if there's any way that we could come to some kind of a compromise on what we would be asking for, I'd be willing to try to tackle that. But so far I haven't heard sentiment that that's something that we are going to try to do or that is doable should we try. But let me know if that's something you want me to revisit. And then the EMC also brought us information about and request that we consider how to get a handle on reining in plastic bag use. The plastic bags of the nature, the kind of plastic bag that you use when you exit a store, as opposed to the plastic bags, the littler ones that are used within a store to measure out smaller amounts of things, the stuff that you carry out. We had about 30 people in the room. We had people from various food businesses. Wegmans sent both their manager locally and their sustainability coordinator from Rochester. Jan Rhodes was there from Green Star, the farmers market, to talk about some of their experience. And contrary to the headline in the Ithaca Journal, this was not a public hearing. This was a meeting. We don't even yet have a proposed course of action. There are various methods that communities have used that have decided to tackle plastic bags. There are some big communities that have done so, including San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago is talking about it, New York City is talking about it, and smaller communities. The gentleman from Wegmans talked to us about the fact that they're opening a store in Germantown, Pennsylvania, where there is a 5-cent fee on plastic bags. The fun part of the meeting was that we were approached by a group of kids ranging in age from 6 to 12 or 14. There were four kids there who themselves formed a group called the Plastic Hurts Club. they did a presentation. We were literally addressed by a six-year-old who, I'm sorry, Karen went right home from the meeting and wasn't in today, so I didn't get the list with the names. So I don't have the name of the six-year-old who addressed us with such aplomb until she looked up and saw 30 people looking at her. But they came with what they called a plastic bag bomb.
Monster,
not a bomb, excuse me. It was big. It was, they went to Wegmans and got the plastic bags, a big bag that had the plastic bags collected by Wegmans in an hour. It was, I mean, it would fit in the middle of our space here, between two or three of the microphones. And talked about the numbers, which is, we're talking numbers up around a trillion bags that gum up the works for boats, that gum up the works of our own recycling plant. Barb Ekstrom was there and talked a little bit about that. But we're also talking about bags that make it convenient for people to run into the grocery store and come out with their groceries, with an easy way and light way to carry. So this is a big topic. The EMC has, this is the second time they've come to us with this. They have agreed to still carry on to the next step, which will be they will work with the Chamber of Commerce to jointly put on a longer informational session for the community. So watch for that later this summer or in early fall. So that would be a meeting with an opportunity for people to weigh in. They'd then also look at what the more specifics, how people in other communities have addressed this, who have wanted to, and would come back to us with a more specific proposal, and then we'd have to decide whether to act. At that point, we'd have a series of meetings, and we would certainly have a public hearing before we did anything as well, since it's a local law. So Andrew Kassler did get that right within the article today, but the headline, just you should know, was not entirely accurate. I'll try to come next time with just some of the choicer bits of information about plastic bags, because I there was stuff I didn't know. I found it very interesting, and the press has certainly taken an interest in this. I think that does it.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you. Let us take a 10-minute recess, and please be in your chairs at 17 of the hour. Thank you. 17.